You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Listeners to Red Eye certainly will recognize the voice and the work of David Barsamian, founder of Alternative Radio. Indeed, listeners to more than 125 radio stations across the United States, Canada, Europe, Australia, and South Africa similarly recognize his voice and appreciate his sustained and stimulating work as a radio broadcaster, author, and public speaker. And we're very pleased this morning to join with David at his home in Boulder, Colorado, prior to his visit this coming week to British Columbia, where he's going to be speaking in both Vancouver and Victoria. Good morning, David, and welcome in person to Red Eye.
Thank you so much, Mordecai. It's great to be on Co-op Radio. You know, one of the very first stations anywhere in the world to broadcast alternative radio, so I've always had this connection with Co-op in Vancouver.
How did you get involved in radio broadcasting? Was it a long time wish, or was it a happenstance?
It was clearly the latter, an instance of serendipity. I moved to Boulder, Colorado from New York in 1978 after a rather unsuccessful career as a sitar player and a middling career as an English as a second language teacher. And when I arrived in Boulder, I found that a community radio station just went on the air, KGNU, and they were looking for volunteers. And since I had spent a good deal of time in India studying the music, my parents are from the Middle East, so I have a smattering of knowledge of Turkish, Iranian, and Arab music, I proposed a program called Ganges to the Nile to discuss the musics between those two great rivers. And that program quickly integrated cultural and political information as well. That evolved into another program called Hemispheres. And then I started distributing nationally and internationally in the mid-1980s.
That's a wonderful story from the sitar to alternative radio, and glad that you kept your interest in music as well. What does alternative mean to you, alternative in alternative radio?
Well, I think it means that the corporate-controlled media, which is dominant not only in the United States but in Canada, if memory serves, I believe British Columbia has the most monopolized media situation in the entire country. To me, it means thinking outside the box. To me, it means challenging the dominant hegemony. To me, it means standing with working people, standing with the oppressed. One of the early mottos of journalism in the United States was to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. Well, what has happened, particularly in the United States over many decades, is that journalists themselves have become celebrities. Christiane Amanpour, Thomas Friedman get millions of dollars in salaries. They're paid tens of thousands of dollars when they give lectures. So they've really quite distanced themselves from, let's say, the stereotypical view, which was not actually completely wrong, of in the 1920s and the 1930s, where a journalist would have a pulled-down fedora, tapping away on a typewriter, smoking a cigar or a cigarette in a smoke-filled office, and earning $20 or $25 a week. Those days are long gone. So I think it's important to stand with the downtrodden. I know that sounds a bit romantic, but it's the animating spirit that drives alternative radio.
Carrying on with that, what connections do you see between the media work, which is alternative and challenging, afflicting the power holders? We see between this media work and organizing of people in struggles.
Well, I think media, progressive media in particular, like Co-op Radio, like Alternative Radio, like Z Magazine, and other journals and radio programs, TV programs, Grit TV, Link TV, Deep Dish TV, etc., should be a vehicle, be a kind of, in terms of the electronic media, radio and TV, be an electronic umbilical cord for these movements so that people can get information so they don't feel so isolated. One of the geniuses of late 20th century and early 21st century capitalism has been to atomize people, to separate them, to isolate them, to get them in front of a TV or a computer and feel completely disconnected from culture and society. So alternative media should be making those connections so people are not batty when they hear, information or get news about the incredible class warfare that's being waged in the United States. That's to say, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and imperial wars are being fought in Iraq, in Afghanistan, bombing of Pakistan, bombing of Yemen, bombing of Somalia, all of these things going on simultaneously, always in the name of some noble cause such as democracy or freedom. Lately they've been using shamelessly women's rights and human rights. The propagandists for empire will do whatever is possible. They will use whatever excuse and justification that they can fabricate in order to continue their imperial agenda.
Now, I was looking at your website, and the most frequent person you interview and record is Noam Chomsky. You have 213 recordings. You have Howard Zinn next with about 54, and you have a range of people like Angela Davis and Tariq Ali and Ralph Nader and Christopher Hitchens between 10 and 20. Any comment on the respective frequency of all these stimulating analysts?
And don't forget Edward Said, who's the the topic of my latest book, The Pen and the Sword, which I'll be talking about in Vancouver and Victoria as well. Well, I think these are some of the voices you mentioned are some of the most prominent and critical social public intellectuals in the United States. Let's not forget some Canadian names, by the way, such as Maud Barlow and Naomi Klein and David Suzuki, who I've also featured on alternative radio, not with the frequency of the ones you cited, but I always love to include Canadian voices. It's important, I believe, and part of the mission of alternative radio, to disseminate the views and perspectives of radical intellectuals, people who have something very incisive and cogent to say about the political economy, particularly in the United States, and the imperial foreign policy of the United States, which is, as I alluded to earlier, largely occluded and masked over in favor of noble rhetoric.
Is there someone you'd like to interview that you haven't yet been able to?
Yes, I've been trying to get an interview with Confucius for many years, and it's been very, very difficult. As you know, he doesn't have email, and post to China is very slow. But in fact, I did, I kind of tell this as an anecdote, I did, in fact, interview Confucius many, many years ago and asked him what he would do if he were head of state, ruler of the realm. And of course, he laughed. He said he wasn't interested at all in doing that, and he was more interested in philosophy and meditation and meaning and the meaning of life. And finally, I got him to answer. I said, just one answer, please. I've come all the way from the United States to China to talk to you, to do this interview. And he said, okay, the one thing I would do is rectify the language. And I thought that's, very interesting. This is actually in his Analects. And rectifying the language means recovering it from the propaganda veneer and sheen that it's that it is encumbered and englossed with.
You mentioned the imperial war in connection with the economy. Is that the most urgent issue you think to focus on today?
No. The most urgent issue is the destruction of our planet, which continues unrelenting, which has accelerated way beyond the predictions of scientists and experts. I think the very survival of the species is at risk, and that has to be front and center. The fact that the imperial war machine, particularly in the United States, and its adjuncts such as Canada, Israel, and other countries, the military is the number one polluter, is the number one contributor to greenhouse gases, to global warming. So it would not only save lives, but it would also save the planet if the imperial war machine can be stopped in its tracks.
You combine radio broadcasting with journalism, with book publishing. You referred to the new book on Edward Said. You also do public speaking. You're coming to Vancouver to do that in Victoria. How did it come about that you engaged in all these complementary forms of alternative analysis?
Well, I had a very extraordinary educational background. I barely graduated from high school in New York. I went to college for 1 year in San Francisco and quickly dropped out. I was disgusted with it. And then I went to Asia. And my great good fortune was to become a disciple of one of India's great sitar players, a great maestro. His name is Pandit Debu Chowdhury. And he took me under his wing, and I saw how he was able to do a multiplicity of things, not just music, but dealing with the media, giving seminars to junior high and high school students, giving lectures, of course, giving many, many concerts. So it was those years I spent with him that I saw the possibility of doing several things and doing them very, very well. I mean, he's a master musician, and so I somehow, by osmosis, assimilated all of that that I was exposed to in India, and was able then to use it in radio work. Radio is about talking, as I'm talking to you right now. So public speaking is not a great leap from that. And to do good radio, you have to have good narratives, you have to have good questions, which means you have to be a good writer. So writing is part and parcel of all of that. These are all integrated and intersected disciplines. And so I feel very comfortable in public speaking, and I took to it readily. I love connecting with people because, listeners on co-op have a certain idea of me from the radio, but when they see me in person, then it humanizes the voice. It puts a face to the voice, and so I think that's important, and I really look forward to returning to British Columbia after many, many years. I haven't been there in over a decade.
Well, I'm going to give people the details of where you're going to be speaking in Vancouver and Victoria, and look forward to seeing you when you're here. Thanks a lot for joining us this morning, David.
Thank you, Mordecai.
I've been speaking with David Barsamian. He's founder of Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. Alternative Radio is broadcast on over 125 stations across many countries. And for more information about them, you can go to the web and click on alternativeradio.org. In a week today, Saturday, November 20th at 7:30 p.m., David's going to be speaking at the Vancouver East Cultural Center, 1895 Venables. And the evening also will include include a performance of a play by historian Howard Zinn titled Marx in Soho. And Howard Zinn was a person that David Barsamian interviewed many times. Tickets for that are $25 and $20 for students and seniors. The proceeds are to benefit People's Co-op Bookstore, which is BC's oldest independent bookstore at 1391 Commercial Drive. And they're celebrating their 65th anniversary this year. And David's also going to be speaking in Victoria on Thursday this week, November 18th at 7 p.m. The venue is the University of Victoria David Lam Auditorium. And if you want more information, you can contact the campus radio station there, CFUV. Their phone number is 250-721-8607.